And, you know, when I was a young man, when I was a teenager growing up, just down the road from us, there lived a woman, and her name was Olma. And she had about an acre, maybe acre and a half of property. And this property was just filled with stuff, with junk, really. There was old farm equipment. There was building materials. There was just stuff all over this property. But you know, there was one item that she had sitting on this property that would just break my friends and my hearts every time we'd look at it, because what it was a 1956 Buick Special. And if you've never seen a 1956 Buick Special, you should Google it, not right now, but after. Take a look at that and see what a cool car it is. And this one was really great because it was a hard top and it was two-tone. It was aquamarine and black. I mean, it was so sweet. It was a beautiful car. Or rather, it was a beautiful car. It had been a beautiful car. By the time it was sitting there on Olma's property, it didn't have an engine in it. And since a car without an engine is not good for too much, it had become a home for Olma's two goats. And it just broke our heart. I mean, that car was meant to do so much more. That car was built. That car was purposed to be going down an open highway at 70 miles an hour, showing somebody the countryside in luxury and style. This car was not meant to be a goat house. Whether we are Christians or not, whether we are religious or not, whether we believe in Jesus or not, I think we all have deep inside us an idea that we have a purpose. And when we are not fully fulfilling that purpose, we can get sad. And right now, I feel like we're susceptible to those kinds of feelings more than ever. We're not going to work the way that we used to go to work. We're not dealing with people the way we're used to dealing with people. And we may be beginning to feel that we're just out of sorts, just not really fulfilling our purpose. Or during this time of solitude, we may have been thinking, maybe reflecting on the way our lives were going before and discovering that maybe it wasn't as satisfying as we thought it was. And we may be looking for a renewal of purpose, maybe a new direction in our lives. Well, these last weeks, we've been talking about purpose, about Jesus' purpose in the beginning parts of his ministry, where Jesus was traveling throughout the area around the Sea of Galilee. And you remember a couple of weeks ago, we met two sets of brothers, Andrew and Peter, James and John. And they were fishermen, but they were kind of looking for a renewed sense of purpose in their lives, looking to go in a new direction in their lives. And we know this because apparently when they weren't fishing, they were hanging around with this really fiery preacher called John the Baptist, who was super serious and super intent about people renewing their sense of purpose in life and orienting their direction towards God. Well, these two sets of brothers saw that Jesus was the person who could help them do just that, give them a renewed sense of purpose and a new direction in their lives, and could help them understand what it was that Jesus meant when he said that people should live in the kingdom of heaven, which simply means a way of looking at the world, looking at each other from God's point of view. Looking at the world and looking at one another, putting God first, and then loving our neighbors as ourselves. Well, these two sets of brothers, they became Jesus' disciples. They became his students. They began to follow him around and be part of his ministry. And they began to see how it was that Jesus lived out this kingdom of heaven way of living. And they noticed that Jesus really valued people. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter where they were from or what they did or especially what they had ever done. Jesus valued people for who they were. And that gave people an amazing sense of hope. Now, everywhere they went, Jesus would heal people. Now, Jesus had this amazing gift. He was able to actually physically heal people. People who were blind, people who were lame, people who were lepers, you name it. He was able to actually physically heal people. But people who were around Jesus were also healed spiritually and emotionally. They had this sense of renewed hope whenever they were around Jesus. So Jesus helped people understand that they were valuable, that they had intrinsic value because God loved them and God valued them. But that's not all he did. He also helped the people who were around him, who were following him, understand that they were blessed, they were fortunate, they were in a good place in their lives when they were poor in spirit. This is what we talked about last week. And what that means to be poor in spirit is, I don't know if you've ever had the experience, maybe you have, I certainly have, when you get to that place in your life, you get to some sort of crux in your life, a place in your life where you realize that you just don't have the resources, you just don't have the power to make the kinds of changes that you want to see in your life, that you realize that you don't have the power, but God does. And when we get to that place, Jesus says, that we realize that we don't have the power, but God does, and then we humble ourselves, we let God take the reins in our life for a little while, we let him get up the bat, you know, and take a crack at our lives. When we do that, we are blessed. We are in a good place. And get this, we are set up. We are set up to be set apart for this amazing purpose that God has for you and God has for me, that is defined in this passage by Jesus. This purpose that God has for you. No matter what you do for a living, no matter how you spend your days, this purpose that God has for you is meant to infuse whatever you do and be a foundation for whatever you do, and add renewed purpose to whatever you do. And that purpose, Jesus says, is to be salt and is to be light in the world. Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. And if we think about that, if we think about what that could mean, I guess one way to look at it is we want to be something that's really, really tiny, that goes in somewhere, that doesn't overwhelm things, it doesn't ruin things, but is just there to kind of add a little bit of spice. You know what I mean. If you've ever had a perfect breakfast and you go to put salt on it and the lid comes off the salt, you know that too much salt ruins a meal. But that's not what Jesus means. Jesus isn't asking us to be small and kind of inconsequential in any way. In Jesus' day, salt was used to flavor, but it was mostly used. It was life-saving as a preservative. It's what they used to preserve food so that it could last and so that people could be blessed by it for a long, long time. Those fishermen that followed Jesus, they knew this better than anybody. They could have a great haul, a great catch of fish, but it would be useless after a couple of days if they weren't able to salt it and preserve it. Well, Jesus is asking those people who follow him, who want to get in on this purpose that he has for us, he's asking us to be a preservative in the world. And what do we preserve? We're preserving. We're asked to preserve and protect God's will in the world. God's good desire for people. We're asked to act as a preservative in the world. And sometimes that is going to mean that we have to act in ways that are counter to the prevailing cultural norms. I'm going to say that again. Sometimes we need to act in ways that are counter to the prevailing cultural norms or even our own nature in order to preserve what God's will is for the world. I'll give you an example. One time, Jesus told a story where there was a man walking down a road, and as he was walking down the road, he got jumped by a couple of guys, and they beat him over the head, and they robbed him, and they left him in the road for dead. Well, Jesus says that two men came by at different times, and both of them passed this man by. Even though he was on the side of the road, he's suffering, they passed him by. And the first man that passed him by, get this, he was a priest. He was going down to officiate. He's going down to the temple to lead worship. He didn't want to touch this man because if he were to touch this man, according to the customs of the day, if he were to get his hands bloody or defiled in any way, he wouldn't be able to lead worship. So he went right by this man. Well, the second man that came by was a man who was going to help out at worship, assist at worship. And I guess maybe he just didn't want to be late because the priest had already gone, who knows. But he looks over at the man and he also goes right by the man. But the third man that came by, Jesus said, he was from another country. And in fact, the country of the man who was coming by and the country of the man who was robbed, they'd been at war with one another. They'd had acrimonious relations with one another. They'd been enemies of one another. They were supposed to hate each other. But this man who came by, he acted counter to the cultural norms. He saw a suffering man. He picked him up. He carried that man into the town. He got the man a bed at an inn, and then get this, he paid for that man's stay at the inn for as long as it would take for him to recover, paid in advance for this man's recovery. Jesus would say that it was that man who was the salt of the earth, preserving and protecting what it is that God's will is, that we should put God first, and that we should treat others the way we would treat ourselves. He's the salt of the earth. Now look, that man who did that, the man who was the salt of the earth, he wasn't a big hero. They didn't give him a big parade or anything like that. He did his work. He did his job. He fulfilled his purpose in that moment the way salt does. Silently preserving behind the scenes. He fulfilled his purpose. Now Jesus says we should also be like light. And that's a little different. Light is not retiring. Light is activist. Light floods the zone, floods darkness, beats back darkness, makes it disappear. Light beats back darkness. And of course, darkness is a metaphor for evil, for all of those things that run counter to God's desire for human flourishing. Light beats back that darkness, and we're to be like light in the world. At the end of World War II, the Allies came in and they liberated the German concentration camp at Buchenwald. And when they came in, when the Allies came in, they were just horrified and astounded at what they saw. It was just incomprehensible to them, the level of cruelty that they witnessed. The people who were emaciated, who were just dying, starving to death. The bodies, corpses stacked up like cordwood. Railway cars filled with corpses. The showers, the gas chambers that had been made to look like showers, the crematoria that had been running day after day after day. You know the horror. You've seen the pictures. But you know the reason that you've seen those pictures is because when Dwight Eisenhower, the general, arrived on the scene, he had the foresight to know that this level of evil, would never be believed by people if they didn't see it with their own eyes. And so he brought in camera crews, and what he did is he took that evil and he shed a great big light upon it. He made it known so that could never happen again. He raised this great big beautiful light on that evil so it would disappear. We are called to call out evil where we see it. Where we see those things that run counter to God's desire for human flourishing as revealed to us in the person of Jesus and in Scripture, we are to call out those things. So listen, our purpose, Jesus said, our purpose, no matter what else we're doing, our purpose is to preserve and then to promote God's will on this earth. But listen, if we are going to be salt and light in the world, and that's what Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world. If we're to do those things, we can't do that by being separate from the world. We have to be in it. But listen, here's the danger. When we're in the world, we have to be careful that we, the church, is not compromised by the values of the world. And Jesus is so clear on this, isn't he? Jesus is so clear on this. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. Now, what Jesus is saying here is, look, if you have salt and it's there to preserve food, if that gets contaminated in any way, it's no longer good for preserving food. It's only good to be thrown out onto the path and be trampled over by people. In the same way, when we as a church lose our distinctiveness in the culture, in our society, when we lose who we are, again, based on the revelation of Jesus and His Word, well, there's no reason why people should listen to us. There's no reason we lose our moral authority. We lose whatever it is that's distinctive about what we have to offer the world. The same way Jesus says, you are the light of the world. A city on a hill, it cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. When we are reticent to stand up and speak out against those things that run counter to God's will for human flourishing, when we don't stand up and point out evil in our midst, we might as well be like lights put under a bowl. Listen up. We are not fulfilling our purpose. We're like a bicycle without wheels. We're like a 1956 Buick Special. That's a goat house. And Jesus says, we're the salt of the earth. And we're the light of the whole world. That can seem like such a huge mission. And it is. But we should never let the bigness of that mission dissuade us from carrying it out in whatever measure we can. And I think that Jesus would be perfectly happy with us tweaking His words a little bit to say that you are, that I am, the salt of my home. That you are, that I am, the light of my family. And wherever we are, we're to be that salt and that light that preserves and promotes God's will. And it has to begin with us, with each individual person. When we decide that we are going to follow Jesus, or when we decide that maybe we think we want to follow Jesus, Or maybe we just are thinking about following Jesus. As soon as we begin down that road, here's a guarantee. We are going to begin to see what it's like to live in His kingdom, in the kingdom of God. We're going to be blessed. We're going to be set up to be set apart for this great purpose. And we're going to carry that out every step of the way on this great adventure, this great journey, this great adventure that we have with God, with Jesus, on our way home, to be home eternally with Him. But in the meantime, this week, we have a job to do. Now, in these coming weeks, we're going to be looking, continuing in this series called Homebound. And next week, we're going to be looking at how God calls us to really live by a very high standard of living, a high standard of behavior. But at the same time, to always be aware that we need to see ourselves and see others the way God sees us, with mercy, with compassion, and with forgiveness. All that's great. But now, this week, those of us who are believers, that really want to follow Christ, I challenge you to really look at your family. Look where you are. Think hard about what that one thing is, what that thing is that you can do to be the salt and be the light in your family, wherever you are. Think about it. Write it down. In the evening, review it. Did I do it? Was I able? And those of you who aren't Christians today, that's cool. But I have a challenge for you. Think of one thing that you would like to change in your family. One thing that you think could make your family, your environment, your friend group, whatever it is, better. And then determine how you are going to be the catalyst for that change. Not how you're going to change everybody else, but how you can be the beginning of that change. And here's the thing. If you get stuck, those people who are already believers, if you get stuck, take this risk. Ask God to help you. Because God will. Because God purposes for you and I to fulfill our purpose, our great purpose, to preserve and to promote His will on this earth, and to do that for our sake, for the sake of our families, and for Jesus' sake. Amen. Let's go ahead.